Hello and welcome to episode 74 of Champion the Gamer. My delight this morning is to bring you Cy White. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Super excited. There's so much I want to ask you about because you do a job that I love. And I want to ask you firstly, let everyone know what you do, who are you, etc.
Yes, my name is Sai. I've been with What Culture Gaming for about just over 3 years now. Most people at this point, I think, will know me as the editor of the weekly, currently bi-weekly show, Choose Your Own Adventure, where I show up on pretty much every episode in some form. I also do various other bits of presenting and writing and editing. Basically, wherever they need me, I will slot into place podcasts. And over the course of the last year, I've been running the place a little bit, frankly, while everything has been changing, as you'll know from your conversation with Scott. And I'm also the host of the First Aid Spray podcast as well, which is a Resident Evil podcast, which has been running for 6 or 6.5 years now.
Content, always your thing or not?
Content, always my thing.
When did you start doing it? What was your first like call to arms for it?
I think I might I had this conversation a little bit last week. My internet sort of creation history goes back before YouTube itself. I'm that old. I was making like web comics and stuff before there was YouTube. And then when YouTube arrived, that was the moment where I was like, oh, okay, I can't. Back then, if you wanted to watch a video online, it would be privately hosted on websites, which was expensive. Or it was like flash animation stuff, right? We don't see so much flash animation now as we used to, but when people could upload full videos, YouTube was the place to be. And that was where I was like, okay, this is how I can participate in this, because I was didn't know my way around flash animation. And started out just doing skits and stuff. The first sort of hint of success that this could be something was my friends and I did a dub of a web comic. It's very much hidden in the archives now. And I was like, oh, okay, this is gonna be something. And from there, it's just kind of spiraled. I've tried a little bit of everything, and this is where we are today.
You said that so nervously about that thing there. Is someone going to find that at some point?
No, it's all unlisted. So no one's gonna find it. It's not that I'm ashamed of it. It's just very old, and I'm like, you know what? Let's concentrate on the now, not the back then.
We're all a bit ashamed of our first stuff, right? There is that a bit of shame there, right? I mean, I'm monotone now. Imagine my first video. It's horrendous.
That's the stuff that I'm kind of like cool with some of it. After that period, I did like the solo video game review thing, which actually was really great because it was like a portfolio, and it's really kind of what got me my job now. That stuff's all hidden because of the shame. That's like, I was, it's, yeah, like you say, monotone, very kind of cold and boring, frankly. There wasn't much to it, but it worked. You know, it was kind of a display of skill rather than personality, I think.
Because have you always been an outgoing person? Because that's something that fascinates me. You seem like a really measured, like chill person, but are you quite outgoing, really?
I don't know, it's difficult. I would say yes now, but not always. In school, I was very quiet. Unless so, you know, and I'm sure many people can relate to this, unless I was around my group of friends, you know, my clan, where you kind of feel safe to be yourself and kind of let that side of you out. And I guess I've just always tried to be in that space and surround myself with the people that make me feel that way. So it's, yeah, I guess so, more so now than I used to be, certainly.
Because then, where does games fit in? What was your first foray into that? What was your first game console, possibly, or game experience? What can you think of?
That's quite hard. There's a bit of a I'm terrible with like memory recall, especially the further back we go, it gets very blurry. But growing up, we had a Mega Drive. We also had a Commodore 64 in our house, which is an older console, so in theory that came first, but I don't, it's a bit of a blur. But the earliest sort of thing that grabbed me was the Mega Drive and Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Specifically, that's if anyone would ask me that question, I'll always go back and say that was my first video game. There were a few Mega Drive games that I think, you know, my entire family gathered around, and early Sonic was one of them a little bit, but I kind of stuck with it and that became my character. I was a Sonic fan growing up, so that was the sort of entry point. And I have an older brother, so it was very much a case of he stayed with games and sort of, you know, asked for whatever the latest hardware was. I didn't know what was going on. Suddenly we had a PlayStation going and going, you know, forwards and forwards until I overtook him in terms of, oh yeah, gaming is my thing.
And then where does, because there's so much in that span I want to ask about, but
Of
Things like
course.
Timeless. You was at Timeless this week. How was Timeless
Yes,
first
it
of all?
was. Timeless was amazing, wonderful. You never know what these things are going to be like, especially smaller conventions. They can be all over the place, but this, the vibe was great. The venue was wonderful. The people who run it, bless their hearts, they really put their all into it. You could tell that it meant a lot to them. They did a fantastic job. The fans were great. It's always lovely to meet fans and, schmooze with YouTubers, several of which had a sort of important impact on my YouTube history, so it was lovely to meet them and talk to them in person.
Because that's what I was going to ask about. Because I had because a guy called Dan went, who I've had on this podcast. I've done his podcast as well, so I
All
know him
right.
well. And he met you guys and said it was lovely and everything. But it's like it must be awesome to see that connection with fans happen more and more now. Because I feel like I had this conversation with other people, but the internet is so massive. You think back from start to finish, i.e., when you first started to now, how much bigger it is. It's scary because it's endless. But in a weird way, it's almost better because you've got loads of little communities, and like you said, there are loads of little conventions and stuff. How do you see it now? Do you see it as a positive that there's so much stuff, or is it too oversaturated?
For me, I don't think it's the oversaturation, but I guess kind of adjacent to that is more that it's everywhere. It's inescapable now, right? Everywhere, everyone, at least on this side of the world, is on the internet. And if you're not, what are you doing? And the access to create and kind of put yourself out there is great, but there is something weird about it because when I was growing up, if you spent too much time in front of the computer, you were weird. You were the outcast. What are you doing on the internet? It's a bunch of web pages where people go and espouse their loves for various things that they have created their own websites long before Facebook, fan groups and this kind of thing. People would have to go out of their way to make websites and web rings and connect parts of the community together. It's probably a good thing that we don't have to scour for it quite like we used to. But there are obviously concerns with us being so connected all the time, which is probably a broader subject, frankly, than what you're asking. But it's definitely been in my mind a lot recently.
Just because I have that conversation a lot where it's okay, yeah. I think about the start of YouTube, you've got Evolution of Dance and you've got the gorilla video, that's all we had, so we valued it. Whereas now there's so much stuff that there's stuff that can be literally viral that we don't see. And I find that a fascinating debate or topic because, like, how do you approach content in that regard then? You've got like this What Culture page and all the other stuff you do. Are you just throwing stuff out there and see what sticks? Or have you got a plan? You've obviously got a plan. I'm not saying you haven't. But have you got like just a more of a fly on the wall, just throw stuff out there stuff type vibe? Or how do you approach all that?
I think it has to be that you with many things you never know unless you try, right? So, with the case of something like First Aid Spray, which we've been doing, like I say, for many years now, the podcast has remained largely the same, but we've always tried adding additional stuff to that, different show ideas, and some stuff lasts longer than others, and you kind of have to see how people react to. And that's just true, at least speaking from a YouTube perspective, which is what I know. You just kind of have to see what people respond to, and more than that, what YouTube responds to. It's our biggest enemy is trying to figure out what YouTube wants or expects from us. Because if you try and get out of your box, YouTube just gets confused, it seems, and I don't know, it doesn't put it in front of people or something. You can always see that if you go through all your favorite channels, but they've done something slightly different. The numbers will be lower, and that's going to be YouTube not knowing what to do with that. And obviously, the audience just they've come here for one thing. And they're not used to this other thing yet, so they might not necessarily click it. But yeah, it is just you have to give it a shot and see where it lands. And if it doesn't work, and we kind of joked about the shame of it, but the trying is the important thing.
And how does it feel working as part of a team? Because obviously when you first set out, I'd imagine, I mean, you mentioned about the podcast and stuff you do, but how does it feel working as part of a team doing that kind of thing? Because it's a big collaborative effort, isn't it?
Yes, it's great. I love it. It's with this webcomic thing that I mentioned, that was kind of a team in the terms of it was me and my school friends. I was doing the lion's share of the work, and I was just kind of like, come here and voice these characters for me, and occasionally make sort of key decisions on these things. And trying to organize groups of people, as everyone will know, especially like in our 30s and stuff, just trying to get your friends together on a regular basis is
Or
hell.
keeping friends, frankly.
Well, exactly, right? So trying to organize a creative endeavor, very much similar or worse. And which is why I sort of started doing the solo YouTuber thing because it was like, right, well, I'm going to do all of this myself. I want to keep on doing this and I can't keep waiting around for other people and stuff. So re-entering sort of a team-based space is slightly scary in that regard. But everyone is coming from the background of, oh, cool, I can relax a little bit now. And then everyone is also coming from the background of where can I help when someone is doing that relaxing. The collaborative process is great, frankly. Big fan of it. And also we have the opportunity to be like, hey, I want to do this one thing by myself. And we're kind of allowed to go and take a project and run from it from wherever you'd like to start, from wherever you'd like to end, if you are a writer and a presenter and an editor, or just certain parts of that. You know, grabbing someone and being like, I would like you to do this portion of it for me because I think you'd be a great fit for this project is cool to be able to do that and kind of expand your horizons in that way.
Do you ever sit just really quickly? Do you ever sit back and think how far along you are in the food chain because of how much you can actually do? You can edit, you can voice, you can. Because there's something. It's funny, but it's deadly serious. Like there's some people can't do anything, if you know what I mean. Or you start out and some people do. And it's not a knock on them. We all do it to begin with. No face on camera, or
Right,
there's a
totally.
whole host of different things people don't do at the beginning. Maybe they can't do it or don't want to do it, whatever. But you've got so many different skills and different like things you can do. Do you ever sit back and go, I'm achieving something here?
I just, the use of the word food chain really threw me there, that we're all out to get each other. But yeah, I sort of know what you mean, because when I was hired, peek behind the curtain, the interview that I had with our former boss literally basically just amounted to him sending me a link to one of my own videos and being like, just watch this. Did you write, present and edit it? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, okay, welcome aboard. So yes, valuable skills to have if you can yeah, dip into as many different facets of it as possible. And having done all these different things and kind of being responsible for them has also given me the ability and patience with the scheduling side, the organizational side. The rest of the team will tell you that I'm very organized and frankly quite bossy. That's what I've come to realize in the last year. I'm very good at taking charge of those kind of things, which is why, as I've alluded to in the last year, when things have kind of been a little bit mad over at What Culture, it's just naturally fallen on my shoulders because I can do that as well. So I don't want to sit here and pat myself on the back too much. But yeah, a little bit. It is kind of mad right now as we transition into sort of what's going to be a new era for the channel. I find myself regularly being called upon for answers to questions that 3 years ago when I started the job, I really was not seeing this coming, but it's great.
How does time flow in that sort of world? Because you said you're 3 years in. That's because I followed What Culture for probably 11 years, between
Nice.
14, 15, something like that. And it's obviously changed a lot, as a lot of pages have. But that time has just flown by. How does it feel knowing you're 3 years in now?
It's funny actually, because people still refer to me as being new to the channel. And I completely get that, because you're right, time is an illusion and it makes no sense. And I think a factor on that as well is the fact that we haven't really had a lot of new faces since I joined either. So I still, you know, am the newest, I guess, for the most part. Yeah, time is a complete illusion at this point in my life. All I know is that, yeah, kind of, if I look back, it stretches kind of endlessly all the way back to pre-YouTube, the grind that got me to this point. But in terms of being at What Culture, it has completely flown by. But then I'll see something and go, oh yeah, I forgot about that, because it was 2.5 years ago. I forgot I made that one video out of these hundreds of videos that in some form I've touched along the way.
You must, because there's so much that you do in a bizarre phrase, but there's so much you do that it must feel like a. What, the question I'm trying to ask you: how do you balance your time? How do you balance your mindset and your time? Because obviously, because you do so much, does it ever become too much? Is there a point where you need a break? You need to sort of remember when you first started, what you did it for. I loved it because of this. This is the aspect I love. I try and grab a bit more of that and put it in, rather than just being part of the churn. If that is a question there in any form, does it
I
become
do
too
sort
much?
of, yeah, no, I understand what you mean totally, and I'm still learning that, frankly. I think we're quite lucky in that we're quite a relaxed team. There is a churn to YouTube, you know, we put out at least a video every day, and there is obviously a bigger team than you see on screen as well, because we have lots of freelance writers and editors that help us keep them, you know, ticking over in that way. But we do have the ability to be like, hey, I need to take a few hours or even the afternoon just to decompress or whatever. But I think it's on you as a creator to see that point coming and pull back from it. I guess immediately, right? Or as soon as you possibly can, lay down tools and be like, hey, can you take care of this for a moment? I just need to take a break. Yeah, we're lucky that we can do that. But for the most part, I've been all right with it. I think once we're in this new era and my sort of interim manager role is over, I think I will need a small holiday because it really came out of nowhere. But yeah, we have the opportunity available to do that. And I have the foresight to be like, this is getting a bit much. It's time to go away for a while.
That's because I remember like COVID. I remember when COVID came
Yeah.
around and everyone was stuck at home for days and days on end. I was one of the ones that was like, I love writing. I've been a writer for years, not done anything particularly major, but I like writing. I'm big into literature and all kinds of different things. So I was like, I'll jump on What Culture. There was a big thing where you could join as a freelance writer. I'll do that.
Yes. Yep.
I remember distinctively a podcast of Adam Cleary, and he said that people need to remember when you do that sort of thing, it's not what you think it is. You need to love it and you need a skill set. Because as much as I loved it, doing two or three a day was hard. Like articles alone, forget videos. So that's what I said about the competence side of it. Do you feel like you are competent? You've accomplished something that some people can't do? Because I said about streaming and about doing YouTube and podcasting and stuff. If you could do it full time, could you actually do it? Because of the stuff you don't see on the side of it all and all the extra work you got to put in. It's a bit of more of a churn, I think people realize.
Yeah, there's definitely a question that you need to ask yourself if you're kind of entering this side of work. And frankly, probably the way to find out is to just kind of get close to it and see if it burns. Yeah, absolutely. Because of course, there's the concern that you love doing it in your off time, and then you might not love it anymore, and you have to do it 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. I guess the being able to sort of dip in wherever is needed helps with that. Like if I've been writing a long time, it's like I need to go and do something else, and I have the ability to do that. And I think of certain staff members that are really good at their one thing and they've honed that craft, but I would get burnout from doing that one thing. So I don't know, maybe it works for me that I can do all these multiple things, and maybe that's why I can do the multiple things. Like, subconsciously I've taught myself that, like, now you're gonna get bored of this, do something else for a little while. And I'm self-taught in a lot of those things, like video editing. So I think to a certain degree, to get back to your question, take it for granted a little bit because I've have chipped away at it and kind of got better without really realizing it too much. But if I were to look back on old stuff, certainly I'm sure I'd be like, oh yeah, I would have done that differently now had that been put in front of me. And frankly, it probably would have taken me a lot quicker because I've been grinding away at 9 to 5. But yeah, I still enjoy all the aspects of it. Even it does get stressful, but even the parts of like resolving the stressful problems and being like, yeah, we did good out of this. I think that's the thing that I'm always chasing.
So to get away from the stressful side of it, obviously you are a gamer. That's one of the main things you are.
Sure.
What are you gaming day to day? What takes that stress away?
It sounds like a weird one to say horror games, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, I'm known as the Resident Evil fan. You can sort of tell when things have gotten a bit too much when you retreat into like your favorite franchises and games, right? I need that comfort of something I know. So it's usually like Resident Evil, or on the complete flip side, like Pokemon or something. Those are the ones for me where it's like, I need to take a break from this. I'm gonna go and play a dinky 30-year-old horror game that I know inside out. Just yeah, because it's like comfortable shoes, right?
Are you playing? So let's talk Resi. Are you playing the
So 100%
older versions of these? Have you got a lot of the remakes? Where are you dipping into those?
everything all the time, omnivorous of the entire series. I will and have played everything. Right now, as we sort of hurtle towards Resident Evil Requiem, I'm doing a bit of a series replay, just apropos of my own downtime, no content made out of it, just felt like playing the entire series, I guess. Well, I started playing Resident Evil 1 and it's snowballed. So I played the 96 Resident Evil 1 for the first time in a few years, just played Resident Evil 2, which is a breeze. I play that every few months. The classic Resident Evil 3 on PlayStation. And now I currently have Survivor and Code Veronica ongoing. So I'm making my way through in release order. We'll see if I get through everything before February. I'm going to doubt that I do. But since I'm doing it in release order, the remakes will probably have to wait.
And there's so many in there. That's
There
the issue.
is so many. There's like
Yeah.
30 something games in the franchise now, and there's four of those are remakes somehow.
Yeah. So, I want to get into your stuff later about what you do off the side of things. But, like, I want to get into the hot take side of things. Now, we do hot takes and sort of debates. And I've got one tailored for you, but I'm curious what you're going to come out with. Now, this can be anything from games, game developers, game industry. Anything. Have you got a gaming hot take?
I was literally thinking about this morning. I was like, what am I even really a hot takes person? I've got some, but they feel so overdone. And also, if I was to say I don't like Dark Souls. That's a personal preference thing. I don't know if that's a hot take. So I
You'd
went
be
to
correct.
a man of taste, I see. I went to the team group chat. I was like, "What are my hot takes, guys? I can't think of anything." And immediately, the wonderful Ewan Patterson was like, "Well, you like Halo 4?" And I was like, "Yeah, no, Halo 4. Halo 4 is a good game. It's probably a hot take. I love Halo 4. Part of that is that it arrived for me at the perfect time when all my friends were going off to uni and getting jobs. So, and I was just sort of stuck playing Halo 4 by myself. So it was a real like solitary experience. But also, I was a big fan of the lore and the story, and I kind of liked after Halo 3 went massive, intergalactic war, we kind of dipped back down and took it back to Chief and Cortana and their relationship. And I was really interested in seeing where that went. It's not all great, admittedly, but I had a lot of fun with Halo 4, and I have a lot of love for that game.
I knew we could be friends. Because Halo 4 is so under, it's so underappreciated. It really is. Because
Yes.
I've made that exact point to numerous people. Like, the fact that it's smaller in scale is part of the appeal. Love it for it. Like, we can't have a Halo 1 to 3 is obviously elite. We love that sort of thing. But, like, it needs something a little bit different. Okay, yeah, he's now got a weird thing on his back and he's a bit more shallow, but it's fine. Just accept it and roll with it. And then, obviously, out of that, we then get the lovely Halo Massive Collection, which is just.
Yes.
And one of the best collections I think you've ever seen. But
Yeah.
I'm with you on Halo completely. I really am. I don't think Halo full stop gets enough love now because it looks simple, it looks whatever. But back then it was the shit. It was amazing. So I'm completely with you. Yeah.
I think the complaints that they try to start following the COD hype around this point are really valid, and that comes through in the multiplayer. I still think the Halo 4 multiplayer was really fun, and the stuff they added to it was really great. I've got a lot of good memories about, I think it was called Promethean Vision, which was there's like a set of armor abilities that give you really brief like perks. And one of them was like the ability to see through walls. I was like, this is game changing. So I was always having that. But yeah, I'm massively with you. I think, you can't go bigger every time. I love them going kind of down a little bit and taking it down to the characters. I think what they did with the villain wasn't great. It was a lot of build up in the books, which I was reading at the time, and they didn't really kind of pay it off with the villain. But the story of Chief and Cortana was great. Unfortunately for me, they really torpedoed that right at the beginning of Halo 5 onwards. And I think that is a contributing factor to why Halo, excuse me, doesn't feel nowhere near the giant that it should be, is that the last two games have released as kind of mid to terrible, haven't they? I think 343 have. Should be commended for bringing it around in a lot of cases. I played Halo 5 Infinite just a few months ago, the multiplayer, and it's really, really, really strong. But it's going to be remembered for kind of a shaky launch and a bit of a meh campaign, I guess.
Do you just go back to what I said earlier about you doing the comics and stuff? Do you read a lot in terms of video game stuff?
Probably not as much as I should, frankly. I've probably, got dozens of half-finished books somewhere. I'm a bit more of a non-fiction kind of person, and for some reason I can find myself reading through that a lot easier than engaging with a fantasy book or something like that, and I'm not really sure why that is. Something about just absorbing existing knowledge. So I'll read books about, biographies and stuff, and good books on the history of video games and things like that, certainly, yeah.
So you're not the sort of person that would read a Splinter Cell book and get pissed off when they don't do the same thing with Sarah in the game. That's definitely not me.
Sometimes,
Just putting it out
oh no, really?
there. No, I find that like interesting because people that read a lot and read video game stuff a lot, or even movie stuff, that take the IP and get annoyed, but it's different. It's like it's a movie, or it's whichever one it is. It's a vice versa. Like they make some affordances. So I was just wondering if you ever really cared about details that much. You mentioned Halo there. I wonder if it mattered to you or not.
No, I think, yeah, I'm very good at just being like, well, this is a separate universe. This is a slightly different take on things. This you could even look at it as, in some cases, as an unreliable narrator. That's how I like to think of it sometimes. This is somebody else's perspective on what happened. I think some of the Halo books, some of the early ones in particular, were pretty out, not out there, but they're like, there's some major changes, which we all just kind of accept as these are fun books, but they didn't really happen because the games take priority. And Resident Evil, I read through all the Resident Evil books as part of First Aid Spray, and they're good fun. They're really quite well written, frankly. S.D. Perry, who wrote those, has like a long history of adapting video games and films. She's done stuff like Alien and all kinds of stuff. And she's gone on the record to say that she did her best, but she was writing them as the games came out. So she'd write something and then the next game would come out that would contradict what she'd already written. So in her book, she'd had to pivot. She had like Jill leave Raccoon City after Resident Evil 1, and then Resident Evil 3 arrived a couple of years later, and she was like, not really. She went back again, and it's a bit of a mess. But when we get into the actual adapting the beats of the game, it's really enjoyable to see what she does with it, how she gets around some of the more gamey aspects. She has characters literally like shooting locks off of doors instead of running around in circles trying to find keys. It's just like, what would you actually do in this situation? In some cases, you're faced with a giant monster. No, just run, actually.
So you must love the Resi movies then, right?
I don't mind a couple of them, you know. I don't.
This is one of my hot takes is, and I've said this
Oh
many times,
yeah.
is that Welcome to Raccoon City is rubbish, but I love it.
Oh really?
I love it because it's so cheesy and it's
Yeah.
tropey and it's
Yeah.
just, but it's got everything you need in a popcorn movie. And we've seen so much, like you said there about the games, there's so much Resi content that I need, like the Lance Reddick TV show, the Netflix show. I super enjoyed that. If it wasn't called Resi, it would have been great. But because it was called Resi and it wasn't what everyone wanted, I'm doing air quotes for those who can't see that, it's not the perfect Resi thing. So it's like, well, let's moan about it. No, enjoy it. It's different. The ending didn't make
Yeah.
sense, but that's irrelevant. It's just a point where, like, I just wonder where you sat on the Resi movies because you love the games. You're a big Resi fan. Do we get to number two and then quit, or do we love the fact that it's wild and wicked and wacky?
I think time is kinder to them the further we get, because I think there's possibly an argument for Capcom taking Resident Evil a bit too seriously. The remakes in particular, they're great games, first of all, but they are a little bit dour in some places. Where some of what people love about Resident Evil is the campy, silly B movie side of it. Even looking at the 2002 remake of the first game, which is spectacular and possibly the best video game remake of all time, and I still say that it's like the quintessential Resident Evil experience, but it's very serious compared to the 96 game with its weird and wacky dialogue, you know, and the voice acting and all that stuff. Whether it was meant to be silly or not, it doesn't matter. It's become part of the DNA now that it is that way. The films, you know, you can't really accuse them of not being silly. If anything, that's all they are. I like Welcome to Raccoon City for its silliness. It's certainly not perfect. They probably tried to do too much. And I think Paul W.S. Anderson's films, I could get the argument for their stupid fun, and that's okay. Yeah, I like the first one. I like the second one a lot because it has that balance of
Yeah.
goofy and
It's the most
recognizable.
game-like to me, I think, number
Yes,
two.
and it has a
Yeah.
bunch of recognizable elements, but done in completely different ways. They kind of lose me at that point, like onwards. But I think if I wanted to defend that opinion, it really has just more to do with the fact that you can be silly, but make it concise and like consistent, I guess is probably the right word. But you watch each movie back to back, and they just constantly rewrite their own history, and by the end of it, the last film has really got nothing to do with the plot of the first film. It's disregarded stuff from all over the place to make itself a standalone story, which is kind of a shame. We could have had a six storyline run, whether you think however you feel about the movies, but the lack of consistency really doesn't help. Looking forward to the future of it though. I'll always give everything a chance and see what it is. I don't know what I want out of a Resident Evil adaptation because they've tried everything, and Resident Evil is just so many different things now. I don't think you could satisfy everyone anyway. But looking at Zach Cregger, who is directing the next film, who's just done Weapons, which was a massive success by the looks of it. I haven't seen it yet, but apparently it's great. And Barbarian, which coming out of that film, they could have called that Resident Evil, and I would have been like, "Yep, that'll do. That's it for me." So I'm optimistic about that.
Because we do the next session, which is coaches questions. But one question I've asked in the past is, which villain deserves their own game? And I would have thought Wesker is perfect, right?
Yeah, I could see that. I think Capcom kind of shot themselves in the foot by killing him off. I think it's great they did it, you know, end of close off a story, begin a new one. But ever since then, they've kind of been chasing that, right, and trying to find other ways to bring him back or similar characters. Even going so far as with these remakes, everybody's of course speculating that this is a way that you can, if nothing else, bring him on screen again, and maybe even rewrite the history a little bit and have him stick around a little bit longer. It's quite surprising to me they haven't just gone a full out Wesker game. You're right, I could absolutely see that.
What would you want out of that?
Do you know something that Resident Evil hasn't done a lot of in the last few years? Partly, I think, because of the remakes. Is they used to do loads of spin-offs where they'd like the Revelations games and whatever, where they'd find a year where not a lot was going on in Resident Evil and plonk a story in the middle to kind of try and flesh things out. I think you need to find an interesting year in Albert Wesker's history and kind of set it and be like, here's what's going on between Resident Evil 1, where he gets back up again at the end after you think he's dead. And something like Code Veronica 4, where he kind of makes a bit more of a grand unveiling. Him scheming in the background, finding various viruses and coming up with his ultimate plan. Something like that, I guess, is potentially the most interesting thing to do with it.
Because I'm just trying to find ways of backing my Netflix Lance Reddick show take, because obviously that delved a little bit into Wesker's upbringing and where he saw things and what his logic was. I guess that's just why I like things a little bit different sometimes. Let's go into coaching questions. So as you're probably unaware, we do coaching questions, which are I do questions on my page, TikTok page, and Instagram page about gaming and game related, a bit fun and quirky and some serious, and I'll throw two or three or four depending on time at the guests in front of me and get a reaction. So. Question one is, let's have a look, which is the one I'm going to throw first. What is one thing gaming is missing?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, do you know, it's a bit of a cheat answer, but probably sincerity, I think. And it's probably true of everything, right? We're in capitalist hell at this point in 2025. But I was thinking last night, I think one of the guys at Xbox said recently that they are coming towards the end of the Xbox Series generation. They're wrapping things up, which is mad to me. It shouldn't be because we're 5 years in. So it's like, yeah, okay, sure. But it's been a generation that will just be remembered for all the horrible stuff. I think, you know, the number of layoffs over the last few years, studio closures, and there's just a lot of insincerity in video games out there where even something that seems like this was made for its audience in mind will then suddenly come with the caveat of here's a bunch of microtransactions or whatever and stuff like that. And there's obviously a bunch of studios doing this kind of thing in the indie space, and otherwise we saw it with Baldur's Gate 3 and the now, I think, prophetic speech at the Game Awards about how this is where we should be moving, and we see the success of like Astrobot following that. I'm hopeful that that is a train we can keep riding back to what video games should be instead of so much corporate meddling.
So much there. I mean, firstly, just real quick on Baldur's Gate, I agree entirely because it's sort of I didn't touch it to begin with, and then I jumped on it late. But I discovered the fact there's a game here that you can have, like you and I could play it the same way and have completely different experiences. Like completely. That's where that's character creation, character development, story arcs. I said about The Witcher going and play it doing contracts. The constantly regenerating different stories is amazing. I don't understand why it isn't done more. Well, it's obviously difficult, but it should be trying to be accomplished more. And then the other thing was about sincerity. I'm with you. It's like the whole thing about a generation now. I remember I was listening to Carp 64, the fabulous podcast they do, and it was saying about the PlayStation. So the PlayStation's got this, is it a failure question around it? Where in the actuality, it kind of is, because a lot of the games you're saying that it's a positive for it aren't even out yet. And we're currently this long into the. So. There's a whole thing there where sincerity is a problem because we're not getting what we were promised or what we had in previous generations. And so there's so much to dive into, but it's just interesting to hear you say it.
Yeah, big time. I can't help but feel that, you know, I spent so much money on both consoles this generation, and I've gotten so little out of anything except Game Pass. I think I've probably played on my PlayStation 5 more than I think I have because of the move to digital. I think it's kind of skews with your vision. You look at your shelf and you go, there's less on here compared to, you know, other generations. But that's because stuff was made available digitally or something was on offer or whatever else. But yeah, the number of meaty experiences that I've had through the PlayStation 5 generation in particular has been quite alarming to look back on in the last 5 years. It's not been very many. And also, again, some of that comes down to taste, right? And a lot of video game tastes right now skew, as I kind of alluded to, in a direction that doesn't do anything for me. Souls like, I just won't touch them. I'll see a video game and be like, that looks cool. See the combat and be like, right, okay, that's I'm not interested. Stuff like that. And there'll be stuff throughout the generation that I haven't played yet that I will be getting around to, and stuff that's still to come. Silent Hill F, for example. But it's bizarre to be 5 years into a generation and just feel like most of the games that came out just felt insincere, and there were clearly meant to be a lot more games out, as we know, that got cancelled along the way because of Sony's weird games as a service idea that is whatever has happened to that along the way, been shot down and killed multiple times.
I mean, you've alluded to it a little bit there. Question two is there a part of gaming that you've got zero interest in?
Yeah, like there's a lot of like genres. Someone's like is it's probably not a genre that I'm all that interested in getting into, frankly. I've tried a few times, it doesn't work for me. Stylistically, obviously the games can be kind of all over the place. A lot of them are that dark medieval fantasy thing, which is cool, but I'm not super invested in that. It's fine. Bloodborne is the closest one to me where it's like I wish I could love this because it's got a really cool like horror adjacent kind of aesthetic. There's a bunch of genres as well. I always love to try out an RTS and then fail about 2 hours in and be like, I suck at this. I cannot get my breath. You know, or anything like strategy tactical. I was terrible at Mario and plus Rabbids, which is meant to be like an entry point for the series, right? But I was terrible at that. I'll try them out, I'll enjoy them. It's just like, this just doesn't work with my brain.
Because I had a really good conversation with a guy called Mikey, and I asked him the same question, and he said nothing. Because there's stuff that I don't
That's
like now.
good.
There's stuff I don't want to do now. Like say Dark Souls, I don't want to play Dark Souls now, but it doesn't mean that in 10 years' time I might not give it a go. And I thought that was quite a healthy way of looking at that, because it's like there's so much stuff out there that you shouldn't shut yourself off from stuff,
Completely.
did you? So I
Yeah.
wondered if there was ever a time where you might change that viewpoint a little bit.
It's entirely possible. Like I will say about Bloodborne in particular, I bounced off it twice. So I at least went back a second time, and it's entirely possible. And all my friends will not shut up about how I need to play it. They will break me, and I will try a third time at some point, and hopefully one day it will click. We'll see, I guess. I no promises. You never know, though, right? Because sometimes you do have a genre where you're like, I don't get it, I don't get it, I don't get it, and then there's that one game when you're like, this is the one for me, and then maybe that becomes an entry point, or maybe you just find the one that you like. So maybe that game is yet to arrive.
I mean, I say about Baldur's Gate, not even Baldur's Gate 3, it's Dark Alliance, like turn-based stuff. I love Final Fantasy. I've played a lot of Final Fantasy. There's a lot of stuff I have played, but turn-based generally is a bit of an off-putter.
Right, okay.
I don't count Pokemon as that, by the way. But like, there's a lot of stuff I don't touch because it's like a tough nut to crack.
Right,
Whereas
okay.
since playing Dark Alliance on the GameCube, funny enough, I've then gone and played Kadelka. I've gone and played other stuff that's a bit different, and
Oh,
I absolutely love
nice.
it, you know. And so it's I again, I'd say to people, don't shut yourself off too much. At least
Yes,
try
absolutely.
something. Next question is, what is the best game within a game?
Triple Triad from Final Fantasy VIII is probably the best video game mini game of all time, isn't it? Like it's so simple, it's so good. If anybody's listening and don't know what it is, it's a like a 9x9 grid card game where you pick, I think it's five cards, and so does your opponent, and you just want to place them into the grid. Each card has a number and like a diamond shape that represents a side of the card. And if a card goes down, it has a lower number, or sorry, a higher number than the one it's going up against on the other opposite side, it flips it over, and you're obviously just like looking to get fill the board with your color as much as possible. Frankly, incredibly addictive. Around the point that I was playing Final Fantasy in general, I think I grew up gaming with my brother a little bit, but he kind of fractured away. He's very much into like motorsports video games exclusively, I think, at this point. But we would play Triple Triad together. He would like, give me the controller, I want to play Triple Triad. I was so addicted to it that I was like making my own Triple Triad cards as a teenager so I could play it physically wherever I went with friends that were also big into Final Fantasy VIII. I think fans have made various websites and apps probably that are Triple Triad likes or fan games, but the fact they didn't spin it off into something of its own is kind of mad to me. It was Gwent before Gwent took off. Triple Triad is like the original video game card game, and it's still the best for me.
I was going to say, it's the Gwent I can actually play. I love The Witcher 3 a lot. I just can't play Gwent. So I'm completely behind you there. Completely behind you. What was the, because you mentioned about digital a minute ago, what was the last game you bought based solely on box art?
Oh my goodness. I don't I it's probably like 20 years ago. Honestly, I couldn't even tell you. I Yeah, because I've just been kind of following the industry so long, it's very much been a case of I've seen this in a magazine, I've read what they've had to say about it, right? Or even when you are growing up and you have less income, limited income, you have to know for sure, right? And everyone has that same kind of memory of like back in my day, we get two video games a year, maybe three, birthday, Christmas, and some pocket money saved up or something. So you kind of had to be sure. So we all, at least for my taste, it was like I've got to buy something out of a franchise that I know is going to deliver a certain kind of experience or a certain level of experience. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't think I have a good answer for you on that. I have one that I was just kind of like, yeah, that's fine. When I kind of similar to that, when I bought my Xbox 360, I saw all the reviews for Sonic 06, but as I've said, I grew up a Sonic fan and I had to know for myself. And I went to a local Argos and they had for like one of those 2 for 20 deals or whatever it was. And I was like, right, I'll get Sonic 06, find out what it is. There's nothing else here I want. So I said to my partner at the time, anything here you take a punt on? And she went, Viva Pinata, that looks cute. I was like, sure, fine, don't know anything about it. Sonic 06, I think we played it for an hour. Terrible game. Viva Pinata. There we were at like 3 a.m. So it's not necessarily a case of the box art, but it was the pleasant surprise, I guess.
Because it's a big part of gaming, like, culture, isn't it? Like, if you go into a store as a kid
Absolutely.
and you see on the shelf loads of different colours and different box types and cartridges and stuff, it's like a really big, expansive world you can explore. Whereas if you get onto the Game Pass store and you just see icons, it's not quite the same.
Do you find it overwhelming? I did. It's
Yeah.
just so much where it's like I don't even know where to start a little bit.
Yeah.
So
Because
yeah.
there's a lot of free games. Sorry to cut you off. There's a lot of free games. A lot of stuff you can get off Game Pass or PS Store, whatever it is. I'm like, that'd be really cool to try that. But it's like Netflix. Once you start scrolling, it looks impossible.
It's
You
so
lose the idea
true.
what you even want to look at in the first place.
It's so true. I have seen so many times my boyfriend just boots up his Xbox and then just scrolls through for like an hour, just looking through the store at stuff. What's on offer? He's not going to buy anything. What's in his library? And he just get lost in that. That's a game in itself, frankly.
Do you, because I mean, obviously, if you've got more of a niche taste, probably a bit easier. But like, okay, yeah, I've got a shelf full of stuff and I'm playing through stuff in a certain order, kind of. I've got a shelf up, angles up here somewhere. That one that's got like the games I'm playing right now on it. So I've kind of an
Okay.
idea of what I'm jumping to. So I don't want to walk in the room and go, right, I fancy playing a game now and then sit there for an hour and not play anything. I need a target to go towards.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, having a little, this is
Yeah.
what I'm working on shelf. If you've got a physical collection, absolutely. Otherwise, you'll get halfway through a game, you get distracted, and you forgot you even started it. And I must remember to finish off that 2023 Alone in the Dark playthrough that I started weeks ago before, life got in the way, and I have subsequently been distracted by Astrobot as of this week and so on. Oh, which one's
On that
that? Is that
shelf.
the new nightmare? Nice.
Yeah,
Still not
on the
played
shelf.
that one.
I've got that and the PS1 version. I don't know why. I just
Oh,
have.
nice. Okay. Do you know that came out
Yeah.
on Game Boy Color? I found that out recently. Terrible. Absolutely terrible port. Yes, it's so easy to just like get sidetracked. For me, this year, I started doing like a completions spreadsheet. I also have a sheet for like something that I've made a list of like, here are games that I keep saying, I'm going to play this, I'm going to play this, I'm going to play this. And this way I can keep track of what I've got. If I've started it as well, I make a note of that and just try and finally chip off the likes of, I've never played a Devil May Cry, for example, and so on. I got Parasite Eve 2 the end of last year, still haven't started that, but I love the first one, so I should finally do that. So that spreadsheet's a life for me. So that's been a big help in terms of keeping track of what I've been wanting to play, what I've been playing, and looking back and being like, ah, yes, I haven't finished a game in weeks. Let's grab something, dust something off, and feel good about it, you know.
Two more then. Have you got a horror lost save file story?
Oh, in what way? As in, just
As
it got
have
memory card
you?
wiped, or?
Yeah, anything where you've lost your data or the memory card's been lost or broken or you've
Yeah.
overwritten it, anything.
It keeps coming up on this, but yes, my brother and I grew up sharing a PlayStation 1 and a memory card. And our tastes, as I said, sort of divulged around the period that I was heavily into Final Fantasy. You can see where this is going. And he was massively into Gran Turismo, also quite big games, I think, because definitely one of the first games that I remember having like a completion percentage that you could track. don't play them, so I don't know exactly what it entails, collecting every car, presumably, and beating every track and that kind of thing. One day he deleted my, I think it was Final Fantasy VIII, funnily enough, save data out of spite because his Gran Turismo data was corrupt. And I was apparently to blame as the younger sibling, which I didn't quite understand why, what had happened, but okay,
Because you
fine.
existed, Ty, that's why.
That's exactly it.
Because you were there, that's why.
I needed to be blamed. I was the younger one, so therefore I was stupid and didn't know what I was doing. So we got back to our respective game. We both started again, I guess. I've started Final Fantasy VIII numerous times. It's fine. We'll do it again. And then his Gran Turismo save got corrupted again. And I watched it happen because you know that little bit of text that comes up and says, do not turn off your console while it's saving. There's a reason for that. So I found out why my data got deleted, and it was not my fault. It's long enough now that I don't hold any spite. I have no idea how far through the game I was. You know what it was like back then, pre-internet, and we didn't have the strategy guide, so I was presumably just running around on the world map, getting lost or something. But I do remember the feeling of like, oh, my hard work gone for the first time.
I quite like it. Said there's enough time passed now as if it's like just happened. You've only just got over
It was
it.
a journey.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that journey a bit more. So the last one is, what is something in gaming or in content creation you're yet to do, but you plan to?
Oh, that's a great question as well. I think, do you know what? I'll make a bit of a soft announcement. Hopefully it goes right then, I guess. With What Culture in particular, we have I think historically, I don't want to throw in anyone under the bus because of the nature of the work. We've always got to focus on what's happening right now and what's next week. There have definitely been attempts to do more with social media and community, and they just haven't really lasted. And it's something that I've been banging on about for years, and it's something that I'd like to do more of this year and moving forwards is to build more of both of those things, more of a social media presence. And more of a community presence as well. This year we started the official Discord server as well, which was something I just kind of did slightly on a whim, with Twitter going the way that it was. We were like, let's try and kind of create our own space. And I know lots of people, including myself, wanted to jump off that platform. So it was a way to stay connected with the audience a bit more. And that's a space that I want to grow and do more with, experiment with, and connect it to the social and just kind of engage with our audience more on that kind of stuff. So that's something that hopefully you'll see more of throughout the next year.
You've had, because with What Culture in particular, because again, let's say a decade, I've followed it for a decade, and I've always felt as if no matter what was happening up top, or I'm not speculating, I'm just saying in terms of business, no matter what's happening in and around it, there's been this like community of
Yeah,
it.
totally.
I've listened to the wrestling fellas for, I don't even know how long now, but I've been listening for so long, the gaming side of things for so long, and you get connected as a fan to these people, and it feels like What Culture has always been open to input, or like they're keeping a finger on the pulse of what is happening, but maybe now is a time where you're grasping that a bit more and saying, look, we can actually be a bit more connected even with this Discord server. And I know there's a TikTok thing now and an Instagram, people are doing it. It's great. I think it's fantastic. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It was we if you listen to whether it's the wrestling guys doing their thing or on the Friday podcast we do with the Untitled Banter podcast, which is a lot of question and answer stuff, you'll often hear the same usernames and stuff, right? And in the Discord server we get to interact with those people, and also the audience gets to interact with each other and be like, oh, I recognize your name from the podcast. I've also had my name read on the podcast. And these people get to meet, and it's cool to see them kind of engage in conversation when they otherwise wouldn't. Because, yeah, they're submitting to us, but they're not necessarily engaging with each other. And through doing First Aid Spray, that's been a great part of that. We've always had a Discord server. Being able to build that community has been really special. And I want to bring that to What Culture and push that and see where that can go. And yeah, what opportunities that can potentially afford all of us as an audience and as the creators as well.
Because I've been on Twitter for, I don't even know how long now, but like I've had that experience where I've come. I mean, Matt Rain is obviously the big one for the wrestling side of things,
Yeah,
but
sure.
there's so many people that I know of through Twitter because of it. And like you said there, because you see the same names constantly, we've had conversations, we've had chats, we've discussed things about the podcast we've listened to. It's been amazing. So I'm glad to see that's kind of one of the big pushes, and I'm excited to see where that goes. Let's go into the last part, which is create a spotlight. So it's your
Okay.
chance now to shout out either creators you really enjoy, or if you're not comfortable doing that, that's completely fine. We don't need names, but just give us an idea of the type of content you enjoy and why you enjoy it.
I was thinking about this one. It's kind of all over the place in terms of my sort of YouTube algorithm and stuff that I take in. But I think the thing that I kind of wanted to focus on shouting out this is that every time I boot up YouTube now, because I use this to have on in the background, I'm working, I get a lot of recommendations for like particularly like Mega Drive remixes of video game tracks. I love the Mega Drive's sound chip. I make no secret about that. Part of that is definitely nostalgia growing up with it, right? But it's got that like chunky bass to it. It's great. And yeah, YouTube loves to recommend me a bunch of channels of people that are like doing remixes of pre-existing Mega Drive songs through different, slightly different sound chips, or just taking something like I talked about RTSs. I'm terrible at Command and Conquer. Great soundtracks though. Here's what they would sound like if they were on the Mega Drive. And there's a bunch of channels that it's constantly recommending me, and every time I see them, I click it. Yes, I would like to listen to something from the Castlevania Symphony of the Night soundtrack in Mega Drive. Absolutely, I would. So these have all got like a few thousand followers, and they deserve so much more. There's Neo Thunder X, Savaged Regime, and R Clay. The letter R and the word clay is one word. Those are the three where, like, if they show up on the feed, I'm like, yep, I want some of that, please. I've surprised myself this year. I think I've used YouTube Music more than like Spotify or any other platform. Just because it's good for like if I'm writing something or I want something with no vocals on, just some background noise to keep me kind of focused but not distracted. And these guys do incredible work for that. So
I mean, my heart hurts about Command and Conquer, but we can move on from that.
I wish I loved that series. I do. I just can't get on with it. I'm terrible at them.
You ever, or have you gone through phases of like long form content that you consume, or are you just sort of the short form person right now?
No, absolutely. Yeah, there's a few channels like that. I think he's been going a lot longer than I think, but because he's been doing Resident Evil content in the last year or so, I've become much more aware of him, which is Monty Xander. He does like 2 hour deep dives. He's a much bigger channel than the ones I just mentioned. But I love that kind of thing where it's like, A, this is someone who clearly loves what they're talking about enough to talk about it for 2 hours, or at least has lots to say on a subject. So feels a certain type of way about it. And also, I just love a video where it's like, I'm going to watch a bit here and then I'll find, I'll dip out from this point and I'll come back later on my lunch break or whatever and just steadily consume something in parts where, whether it's the, yeah, I'm eating or doing my makeup or something like that, just something on as background noise or whatever. Or I'm just in front of the TV and it's like, yeah, let's actually focus on this for a bit. Something like 2 hour stuff is great, isn't it, for that?
Whether it's gaming content or it's, I don't know, it's flower music or it's crochet or whatever you're into, like I keep using the word crochet because it's a funny reference for
It is
somebody
a funny
else.
word.
But like, when you're scrolling through, whether it's Instagram or TikTok or you're on YouTube and you're sort of searching, what is something that would grab you? What about a video or a person makes you stay?
I think as well, this is kind of coloured by the fact that I've worked quite a bit in short form, kind of, YouTube shorts, reels, that kind of stuff in the last year. We've dabbled a little bit of that and work. We've never really gone whole hog into that, and that's something we want to do in the future as well. Is that I kind of know what I'm looking for, what makes a good short. So unfortunately, my work brain turns on and I'm like, no. If you take a second to start talking, I'm kind of instantly out. But if you've got, yeah, like that hook in the first moment, that's how you get everyone, right? Something interesting right away, a big reaction, something bright and colorful. Don't be, and we're kind of going full circle here, don't be insincere and not clickbaity about it, but don't say something, grand and then don't deliver on it. That'll burn me. I won't come back for more. But if you can hook someone in with something interesting and then actually deliver on it, that's something.
And stuff, and especially in the background you're in, is it easy for you to spot stuff like this? And does it bother you? Overproduced content, trying too hard content. Does that ever bother you?
Yeah, there's so many. TikTok is full of these like podcasts where it's like, this isn't a real conversation. In one case, obviously, they've just sat down and said, let's film this particular bit for like a short form video, which I guess is fine if they think it's going to work and seem to, and it comes across genuinely. Some of them are like, I'm going to play the idiot here to get comments. I'm going to pretend I don't understand how this works or whatever. That stuff winds me up no end, frankly. So yeah, like you do get a knack for like this is genuine, you know. But I think there are some egregious examples where surely anyone can tell that this is staged.
Yeah,
You'd
I mean,
hope so.
I get put off so quickly. I think part of that's age as well, though. But I think I get put off so quickly by like, this is BS, man. Why are we doing it? Like, it's just such an overproduced, you're trying too hard in my face type thing. I can't be bothered with it. I want someone to tell me something I either don't know or a different slant on something I do know, just something a bit interesting. You know, you said about real conversations. That's partly why I'm doing this, because I love the idea of getting to know somebody like
Yeah,
this
totally.
and having a proper conversation, because I can't be bothered to listen to you scream and shout at me. Like the YouTube streaming man thing, like, I don't want that anymore. I
No,
want a
I can't
conversation.
deal with that. Like I say, have a hook, an interesting something bright, but don't immediately come out the gates shouting at me about something about, oh my God, they've just done this or whatever. I was like, yeah, you've got me on the back foot there.
And my favorite part of the podcast, my favorite question, why should someone be following you?
I bet everyone answers this question the same way. Like, you tell me.
And I saw the same thing with time? No.
That's a good
I
answer.
have stuff just to preload it a bit more. I have stuff for you, obviously. But I love this part of the podcast because it's called Champion the Game. I champion ourselves a little bit. There's stuff that people gravitate to you for. I'm just interested to know if people ever recognize that in themselves.
I think, yeah, I need, I don't think we could all collectively be better at that, and I definitely include myself in that. Going to Timeless last week was a real kind of moment of like, damn, I have really grinded my way to this point. And there are lots of people, and some of it is luck, certainly. There are obviously so many different ways into content creation and media, but I really just kind of knuckled down for like a decade and just tried a bunch of stuff until something clicked and I managed to make it my full-time work. And I think, as I said previously, I kind of take that a little bit for granted and being so self-taught. So when someone comes to me with a question, sometimes I feel bad for thinking, oh, the answer's obvious to me. It's like, well, of course it's obvious to me because I do it every day. So, I guess there is a certain level of like experience and hopefully wisdom that you can kind of impart on that. And if nothing else, I think I know basically everything there is to know about Resident Evil. So if you have a Resident Evil question, I've probably got an answer.
Do you feel like you've got, and I've thought about different ways of asking it, but you've got a voice. You've got this thing that people gravitate to and will take stock in. That they'll invest in who you are and what you're trying to convey. Do you feel that way?
I'm gonna have to say, I assume so. Yeah, I would. Otherwise, people don't continue to tune in. And First Aid Spray, we just hit 100 episodes, and that's just the main show. We've done various other like bonus podcasts, and like I say, we've tried loads of stuff on the YouTube end. But in terms of the main podcast, we just hit 100 episodes, which is crazy. The people that have supported us in any stretch of time throughout that 6.5 years, some since the very beginning have stuck with us all the way through, supported us via Patreon, sent lovely messages and reviews in. And it's incredibly touching to know that you've impacted people's lives like that. So when you get that through, it is kind of confirmation that, yeah, clearly I'm doing something right. I must be not horrible to listen to, engaging, yeah, or charismatic in some fashion, I guess. Otherwise, people wouldn't keep tuning in.
Well, I know for me, there's a hard balance to strike where you can give information, you can be entertaining, you can be engrossing to watch, but also be sincere with it. You mentioned sincere earlier, and I feel like the likes of yourself do that really well. There's a balance that you've struck there where it's like, I can trust what Sai is saying because of a number of reasons. It can be the fact you love it so much. It can be the fact you're telling me that you don't know anything about it, but you're willing to learn about it. You're willing for, if you ask me a question as a fan, so let's say I'm watching your video and you say, oh, can you help me with this and to help me learn this more about it? I can tell you something and you take it in. You wouldn't just shun me away as a fan
Absolutely.
and whatever. So I feel like there's a, if people are going to try and find who you are and find out what you do, it's easy to gravitate to because it's real, it's sincere, it's authentic. And I love that. And I
Thank you.
wondered if you would listen to that and say, Yeah, that makes sense, but I'm going to shun away now. Can you
No, I actually can.
embrace that?
I completely agree. Like, and to bring it back to your first data spray again, we recently had this conversation as a team in the last few months. There is a You'd be surprised if you're just kind of like a more casual Resident Evil fan or whatever, just how many different pockets there are in terms of people making podcasts and YouTube channels and stuff like that, of all different sizes and shapes and followings and stuff. A lot of them are kind of his word of the podcast. A lot of them are very insincere, and a lot of them are looking for the big numbers. And there is obviously, you have to play the game, you have to title YouTube videos a certain way and make an interesting thumbnail. I totally get that. There's a lot of people out there who just go about it in a way that is just kind of gross and doesn't feel genuine and doesn't feel like they're trying to make something out of this. They're just like, this is an opportunity for me to get some clicks. If they make a living off of it, I get it, it pays you bills, but there is a way to do it that is not using AI thumbnails and just, how can I crap on this thing? Because that's what gets the most clicks.
Yeah.
And yeah, we said as part of this team conversation, the thing that sets us apart is authenticity and sincere about everything. We try not to crap on everything. We try to find something nice to say about everything. And if it's something's crap, we'll tell you why we think so in a measured kind of way. And yeah, sincerity is at the heart of everything we do at First Aid Spray. So much so that I, after that conversation, went and put it in the bio of all of our social media. So I think that's a great way to describe what First Aid Spray is, an authentic, sincere Resident Evil content creation brand, if you like. And I guess as the center of that podcast, as the host and the person who puts everything together, that probably comes from me as much as anything else as well. So yeah, I'll take sincere, absolutely.
And the obvious word is substance. There's a thing where you have this level of competence, and again, if you're talking about something you really love, that makes sense. But you're willing to show the workings of how you got to this point, or the journey you've been through as a person, or and you've stuck to your guns on this topic, or you've whatever. You're showing you as well, which I think people can really appreciate. I don't like. I mean, faceless challenge is a bit different. Because there's a guy I follow called Game Boy Customs who never shows his face. Or the Chris Smoot effect I use, where like you never see his face ever, but you love the guy because he's hilarious and he's just charismatic. I'm not saying that, I'm saying faceless in terms of they seem empty. You see they're doing it for the likes and clicks, for the fake interactions, whatever. Whereas the likes of yourself, you don't do that. You give us like a real you that we can then support. I say it all the time about you use like, I don't know, TikTok promote or any kind of tool that grabs your. And grows your following massive, but it's not organic, it's not real. So if you're ever in trouble, or if you put a video out on your personal account saying I'm struggling today, whatever, you don't get support from people because it's not there. If you say I've got I miss a week because of so and so reason, I'm going through this, or my dog's died, or whatever it is, right? If you've got a real connection with people, that's fine because they'll say, no, we're here for you, you reach out if you need it, or we're here when you come back. You don't lose your 4,000 followers because you've bought them. Do you know what I
Yes,
mean? There
big
is
time.
that level too.
Yes, they're here for you as much as the content, I guess. Yeah, completely that. That is definitely the difference between doing something authentic and doing something for the sake of. It's weird, isn't it? Because there's all these different kinds of audiences. Some people will be here for just the soulless stuff because they just want the info, or they just want a place to go into the comments and spew their own opinion, usually negatively. So, yeah, being able to kind of find that line and being like, no, we're on this side, the right side, if you will. Yeah, that's massively important to me, I think.
Because just to sort of wrap that point up a little bit, where I always say about the internet being so endless, it's so endless now that we're moving into the small pockets of communities. I don't need to see these big viral creators anymore because there's so many wonderful smaller creators. The fact they're smaller is only in name. They're still going to make their content, they're still going to make their bread, so to speak. But you just got to go out and find them. You don't need to be swept up in the toxic negativity of everything. To finish off, then, we always do this. Is there anything you want to finish with?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that was a great conversation, frankly. I thoroughly enjoyed this. So thank you for that.
No,
Always fun to do stuff like this, you know.
honestly, it's been a delight. I mean, hopefully we've all learned something. I know I have. And is there anything you want to plug? Anything you want to share? I know you've mentioned about your podcast and everything, but is there anything you want to throw out there?
Yeah, I mean, I will say it again, if you are a Resident Evil fan, big or small, frankly, come check out First Days Ray podcast. We have at this point, 6.5 years in, covered near enough everything in some fashion. We're about to do Resident Evil 6 finally for the first time, so that's been fun playing through that again. But our team is made up of people from all different sides of the fandom. One of our guys was a brand new fan when he started, and yeah, we are very much newbie friendly, but also die hard friendly as much as we can. It's Resident Evil, as I said earlier, is many different things for different people, and I guess we try to be the podcast equivalent of that, I guess.
Incredible. I mean, I'll plug everything I can always. I mean, I've been a massive supporter of what culture for over a decade,
Thank
and
you.
I'll continue to. And I'm excited to see where it goes next. I know you've got a new manager on board for gaming, which is
Yep,
exciting.
yep.
And again, hopefully we'll see more with that soon. You've been episode 74. I'll catch everybody on the next one.
Thank you.